This podcast is part of the Big Heads Media Podcast Network. Go to bigheadsmedia.com for more great podcasts.
StateCollege.com is your one-stop source for news, opinion, and discussion about the stories affecting us all. Read and trusted by more people in the State College and Penn State communities than every other local media outlet combined. Locally owned, locally operated, and locally focused, right here in Central Pennsylvania. Visit StateCollege.com every day for the latest in news and sports from Penn State and Happy Valley. No matter how rosy and promising the big picture may appear, no matter how satisfying and cathartic the experience has been, no matter how well your expectations have been met and probably exceeded thus far, four games into a 4-0 season for Penn State that has seen the Nittany Lions climb the rankings all the way to number four in the nation, there is still one nagging inconsistency that has yet to be adequately addressed in what has otherwise been a basically perfect beginning to this literally perfect start. I'm of course referring to the university choosing to senselessly scan the barcode of every tailgate parking pass on the way into the lots before big games. But it could also apply to Penn State's maddening inability to run the football, an increasingly troubling trend that extended into the Lions' otherwise relatively thorough beatdown of the Villanova Wildcats. We'll get into all of that and more on the other side. Grab your pencil and your paper. It's the obligatory PSU podcast.
I've wondered how President Nixon could know so little about Watergate in 1973 and know so much about college football in 1969.
This is the obligatory PSU podcast, presented by HappyValley.com. You've listened to all those other Penn State podcasts. Now, listen to another one.
All right, and we are back here on the obligatory PSU podcast, and by we, I mean only two of us. Me, of course, your fake host, Chris Buccanani, and my lone running mate today, former Penn State and NFL defensive tackle, Brandon Noble.
Yeah, this is like Kevin Horn's worst nightmare. We're actually going to talk probably football to depths to which Kevin would never let us go. But I just feel like that's what this podcast could turn into.
Maybe a bit. I don't know. You never know what direction it's going to go when it's just me with one of yous.
Yes.
Which I like, by the way. I really like the one-on-ones. I try to get them in when I can, when other folks' schedules preclude them from being involved. Not that I don't like being all four of us together. That is definitely my favorite. But it's just a little interesting for me to mix it up and get the different perspective.
And Horn, I'll forgive him for not being able to do this. I don't know where Mike the Mailman is. It's 3:30 on a Monday. I mean, he doesn't have anything to do. He's probably taking somebody's money at the tennis court.
I was thinking maybe the card game from last night isn't over yet.
No, that's a good point. But with Kevin's travel schedule, I can appreciate the fact he probably needs to work during the week.
The wedding situation between last weekend and this one upcoming is absolutely brutal. And he is, despite what perhaps his online persona might suggest, way too nice to just tell all these people to go pound sand, which I absolutely would do. So instead, he's going to be traveling to like St. Louis and Philadelphia and to State College, then back to Philadelphia, then back to State College. It's total lunacy, which I guess he can still get away with because he is such a young man. But it's... Yeah. Too much for me.
Yeah,
for
you sure. And I are both waking up from mid-Monday naps to do this podcast because we're old men and we spent a little bit too much time outside yesterday or something.
Well, you promised the audience that we were going to talk football, and then you talked about how we're old men. So let me make a liar out of you on the front end and confirm your assertions on the back end, because I'm going to be cranky old man. I've been talking about this for two shows, Noble, and I finally want to get into it. How angry and frustrated I am with, to me, what is an absolutely inexplicable policy being enforced by Penn State this fall. And this is not the first time, but I was sorry to see it make its unwelcome return after coronavirus, of when cars are pulling into the tailgating lots on football Saturdays, there is a barcode, okay, on your parking pass. The little tag that hangs down from your rearview mirror. which, by the way, I think is technically illegal. It's one of those things they can tack on additional charges when they pull you over if you got something hanging from your rearview mirror. So I keep waiting for that, for Penn State to require you to have the parking tag and then send cops out into the lots to ticket you for having something hanging from your rearview. But anyway, they are forcing every car coming into the tailgating lots to have the barcode scanned to verify that it is, in fact, an authentic Penn State parking pass.
That must take forever.
It certainly does. And let's just walk through the logic, Noble.
Yeah.
So, first of all, once upon a time, the process of obtaining a pass to park at the ample, and by ample, I mean functionally limitless space for tailgating around Beaver Stadium, was relatively simple. There were a few lots that were closest to the stadium, that were in close walking distance, or that were set aside for RVs or handicap parking or Letterman parking or whatever. There were a few places where you could have preferred access to parking, and you had to pay a little bit more for that, or maybe a lot more, depending. But anyway, preferred parking close to the stadium. And then everywhere else was the come one, come all, every man for himself, first come, first serve, yellow pass lot. So if you had people who were coming up for one game, or they had purchased tickets from someone else back when there were paper tickets and you could just exchange pieces of paper in order to gain admission to the game.
Crazy.
If you were going to try to put together a big tailgate, you wanted to have 5-6 plus cars all in a row, give yourselves plenty of room for your tables and tents, the whole nine yards. I find myself using that expression a lot, the whole nine yards. I'm overusing it, and here I catch myself doing it again. So if I'm irritating you all with the whole nine yards thing, I apologize. I'm going to try to cut down on it. Anyway, yellow pass system. If you needed those extra cars, you just went to the Bryce Jordan Center, and you bought your yellow parking passes, as many as you needed, because it didn't matter where you were going to end up. You could be over behind the Arboretum, you could be behind the Ag Arena, or you could be out near the hospital. It was yellow pass. Just get my yellow pass, and wherever I'm going, I'm going with my group. Now, in what to me feels a little bit like a solution in search of a problem, although certainly getting people in and out of the fields over the last few years before they instituted that whole run your route thing was becoming increasingly complicated in ways I don't fully understand, because it's been the same number of people for 20 years. It's been the same, you know, limited number of roads and huge number of cow fields forever, right? Mm-hmm. If anything, the access has improved over the years. And it was never an issue until, you know, maybe 3-4 years ago. It started to get really bad. And so in response to that sudden issue of traffic congestion, now they have bisected and bifurcated and every other word you want to use the tailgate fields into what I think is actually about 48, but to me feels like about 48,000 different tiny numbered lots. Like, I used to park pretty religiously over in the Ag Arena fields along Fox Hollow and Orchard Road, for those who know the geography of State College. That area, which again used to be just one giant come one, come all yellow field lot, that's like four different lots now. Some of them are preferred parking, some of them aren't. You can get lot 32 or 23 or 98 or 172 or whatever, and they could all be with a stone's throw of each other. And so if you're trying to do what I just described earlier, which is just put 5 or 6 cars together for 1 or 2 games, it is absolute hell. And one of the reasons why it's absolute hell is because, given the sheer number of different numbered lots, the supply has gone from more than you could ever hope to run through of yellow passes to access the hinterlands of cow pastures that stretch on as far as the eye can see around Beaver Stadium. Now it's like, okay, the tiny number of lot 45 and lot 46 and 47, 48, 49, 50. And so it has created this ludicrous, Brandon Noble, secondary market for parking passes, wherein the The parking lot we are in this year as sort of kind of a post-coronavirus, couldn't change your parking curiosity of circumstances for us involving selling our one RV and not replacing the other. We are in Timbuktu, okay? Absolutely no one would be killing themselves to park where we have to park for Penn State football this year. And it was an agonizing journey of the darkest corners to the internet to find one relatively overpriced parking pass in the lot we are in because of the fact that you went from just overflowing supply of yellow passes to tiny, tiny limited availability in these numbered lots. And they've taken the rich people lots and they have, you know, sliced and diced them a million different ways to the point where most of the parking I could find when I was just trying to find one Timbuktu pass, which was an ordeal. Most of what I could find on StubHub were single parking passes that were going for sometimes three figures higher than the highest listed ticket price for the Auburn game, which was going for hundreds of dollars per seat.
Damn.
Yeah, insane. So that sets the table for where we are now, just trying to get into the lot and use the parking pass that we had to move heaven and earth to get to and park beyond the limits of heaven and earth before we walk into the stadium. It took me 1 hour, 60 minutes, to get from College Avenue up to the entrance of my Timbuktu parking lot off Porter Road. And I couldn't figure out why, because it had been over a year. We did not have this problem coming in at, you know, whatever, 7 or 8 a.m. for Ball State. But Auburn, more people coming, more people arriving when the lot's open. And what is going on is they are scanning these parking passes as people come into the lots. And so every single vehicle coming into the lots, again, you just like roughly do the math. There's 100,000 people in the stadium, give or take. Yeah, that means what, like conservatively, you're talking about, I don't know, what, 35, 40,000 vehicles parking around Beaver Stadium. So we've dozens of RVs, hundreds of cars trying to get into these lots. And every single one of them has to be stopped by this team of timid students who have probably already been screamed at like six dozen times before the sun fully rises over Mount Nittany, right? Who are, have to come up to every car. Please roll down your window and scan your tickets, sir. I mean, listen, don't be mean to these people. Like, they're just trying to make a buck. It's not their fault, right? They have a very simple job, which is simple and unnecessary job, which is scan your parking pass and scan the barcode. Nobody knows to expect that. So they have to, every car has to stop. Why can't I get into the lot? Who's this guy? What does he want? I think he wants you to roll your window down. He wants me to roll the window down? Roll down the window. Yeah, what? What? Can I please see your pass? My what? Now, keep in mind, the line just keeps getting longer as I'm doing all of this. Okay, my pass, you need to see it? Can I get it down? I just ripped it. Now I can't get it back up on the thing. Can I just put it on the dash when I'm done? I just put it on the dash. Okay, well, I give it to you. Okay, it didn't scan. Hold on. Let me try again. Okay, I scanned it. Multiply that by 30,000 cars. Why is this necessary? Honest to God, there are more cow pastures in Penn State than you could ever possibly fill with people who want to come set up tables and tents and drink and enjoy Penn State football. We are one of the only college football venues in America where there is more space than we have fans who want to come and tailgate before the game. And we have one of the liveliest tailgating environments in the country, and we have the second largest stadium in America. Is the idea that a few people might be, I don't know, counterfeiting their parking passes to gain access to the cow pastures that stretch on as far as the eye can see, worth inconveniencing and frustrating every paying customer who has gone out and participated in the Hunger Games of the secondary parking market you've created with your 95 different numbered lots. Is it really worth it? Is the cause of catching the one or two people who are counterfeiting their parking passes, which, by the way, I think is fake and wasn't even happening, even if it was, there are still 50,000 people who paid an arm and a leg, many of them, two arms and two legs, because they had to buy it off the internet to park at your football games, is inconveniencing and frustrating all of them to the point where they spend 15 minutes of a Penn State football podcast bitching and moaning about it, really worth it? I'm going to answer my own question, and the answer is no. Just stop it. Just find something else. I don't want to see anybody lose their job in this post-pandemic economy. Find something else for the scanning folks to do. Put them to better use. But for Christ's sake, Penn State, just stop with the damn scanning the parking passes. Like, I promise you, the counterfeit parking pass problem, if it in fact exists, which of course it does not, could not possibly outweigh the negative of pissing off literally every single person trying to park and tailgate before a football game.
Fair. That was amazing. I don't think you needed me on this show today. That was so. All right. Obviously, I don't get up there for games very often, and I don't think I ever want to come to one now. But
everybody should come up. The rest of the experience is wonderful, and it could be made significantly better by ending this irrational practice.
What is it? An actual hanging pass, like that you paper?
Yes.
What happens when they put that thing on your phone and then you have to pull your phone out and do it like the TSA or something like that?
Maybe that's what they're doing. They're priming the pump to have the fake parking passes to go along with the fake tickets. But then I don't know. They're very adamant that you must leave your parking pass displayed at all times.
Yeah.
Which to me is crazy. What, you know, those fields get packed like sardines with cars.
Yeah.
If they found somebody who was already in there and didn't have a displayed parking pass, what are they going to do? Like airlift the car out of the lot? It's just nuts.
They've been known to bring helicopters into the stadium.
Don't get me started on that one.
Yeah. Yeah. Nothing surprises me anymore when it comes to that side of things and any sort of large organization, right? You know what I mean? Like they're trying to squeeze every penny out of it. They feel like everybody's trying to defraud them, I'm sure, right? And they've made their own mess. I mean, that is ridiculous. One of the cool things about my Penn State memories, and again, it has nothing to do with parking in a parking lot, right? Because I didn't do that a lot. I rode that blue bus in there. But that is one of the cool things about Penn State, right? Is those fields around that stadium and the amount of cars that come in there is absurd. And the amount of space that you have is absurd. It is hard to wrap your head around, you know, that whole operation. And then to think that this is the best way to make it work is to have some poor kid scan the parking pass of some 70-year-old man who can't figure out how. Like I would love to watch my father in that situation. You know what I mean? Like the first time that happens. Or the hell for me for that matter at this point in my life. But like that, yeah, I mean that is absurd and it's unnecessary, but I you know it and I know it. That's the way that things are going up there sometimes.
It is a senseless evil inflicted on your paying customers for the purpose of solving a problem that doesn't exist.
There you go. That's it. And it made for 20 minutes of great content. In fact, I hope that you, next time you go in, you film the whole ordeal so that we can maybe do a segment on it on the show. We'll send my dad up there to ride in with you. You can let him do it.
Now, that would make an amazing segment, actually.
Yes.
Yeah, I would love to get Ron in on street tailgating segment.
Oh, God. Yeah, that would be amazing. We at the Letterman's lot, you used to have to go get the parking pass to get into there, right? Because it was one of those kind of special lots.
Sure.
Right? And that was a giant pain in the ass. Because if you didn't get into town at the right time, like, you couldn't get it. You had to be at the Bryce Jordan Center the day before. I mean, it was, and then you had to go up, and you had, and, you know, Goon knows that whole thing better than anybody else. But they had a problem with that in that lot where guys were getting their passes and giving them to people. So then they started checking IDs at the gate. But thankfully, and it made me think of it because I've sat in line doing that before, but there's only, you know, 50 cars in that lot, tops, you know, every game. And you get two or three in line, and it does get a little agitating when you're trying to find you're rolling down your window, you're pulling the pass off, you're getting your photo ID. You had to have that was the real kicker was you had to have your card, like your little Letterman's card, your varsity, you know, whatever that was, which no one ever had. and so getting, you know, that's somewhere in my desk drawer, you know what I mean? I couldn't imagine doing that to 40. I mean, imagine being that kid, right? Like sitting there, like you said, like most likely severely hungover.
Right? In all likelihood.
Yeah. And you're out there in the warm sun as the day goes on. You're up early and you are dealing with a bunch of people that just want to go have a good time.
Yes.
And you've got to stop them and make it as inconvenient as possible.
And explain the process to them. Again, please do not be mean.
Over and over again. Right. Yeah. And this is not their fault.
Yeah.
Right?
Don't you dare be mean to these people. They don't deserve it. Treat them well. Treat them with respect. Their job is totally unnecessary, but it's not their fault that it was made available and they took the job. God bless them for doing it.
Yes.
Total insanity.
I love it.
At least with the Letterman example, I can kind of marginally understand that a little bit more. It's a smaller space. It's limited access. It's not cow pastures as far as the eye can see, right?
Right.
And the other thing I would just add is, like, honestly, like, if guys were giving their pass to somebody else who was happy to use it and park there and enjoy that lot, clearly they weren't using it. So it's a car. Who cares? I get it. You only want to reserve that space for guys who paid their dues and earned that Letterman status from Penn State. Okay, fine.
But at the same time, it's a park, go to the game, have a good time. That's what it's all about.
Yeah, this is supposed to be fun, so why not let people have fun? I don't know. Just do it. Just stop with the scanning of the passes. Totally ludicrous. And you know what? If a couple of people sneak their way into the lots, who gives a damn?
How much is a pass?
I don't even know. I don't know. I should know this. My wife handles all of our season ticket stuff.
I understand that.
It's all folded in. And again, I don't know how to I don't know what a pass costs anymore because I can't do what I used to do, which is just roll up to the Bryce Jordan Center and buy as many yellow passes as people who needed them. Now it's like, well, where are you? When are you coming in? Where are you parking? Okay, like, here are the corners of the dark web I recommend you go to participate in the gladiatorial combat of trying to pay like $200 for a parking pass to Timbuktu.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I like it.
I guess we'll talk about the Villanova game on the other side of the break.
Sure.
It's the Obligatory PSU Podcast, presented by HappyValley.com. The Lions are on a roll this season, so don't miss your chance to be there in person to see them in action at the Shoe. Collegiate Athletic Travel has your accommodations and game ticket covered for Penn State versus Ohio State on October 30th. With two nights at the Renaissance Columbus downtown and a reserved seat game ticket for just $485 a person. Call them at 800-788-4414 or visit athletictravel.com. That's two nights plus your game ticket for just $485 per person. 800-788-4414 or athletictravel.com.
Come visit us here in Happy Valley and follow the Central Pennsylvania Tasting Trail. You'll discover a wide selection of beer, wine, cider, and spirits, all lovingly handcrafted by the people of the Nittany Valley. And you'll enjoy some memorable settings and meals along the way. Get your Tasting Trail passport and get started today at centralpatastingtrail.com.
We're back. It's the Obligatory PSU Podcast. I'm your fake host, Chris Buccanani. I'm calm. I'm feeling great, as a matter of fact.
And well, I mean, you just got a lot off your chest, right?
I did. You know what? I felt like I had been building this up for two shows, so I had to deliver.
Yeah, you've talked about it a couple times, so yeah. I'm glad you got it off your chest. Hopefully that makes driving into the Indiana game a little bit more relaxing because you've gotten it off your chest. It's not built up, right? We go a couple more weeks and it'll build up again, and maybe we can talk about it again.
Well, I know it's coming at the very least. Maybe that's when I see those guys, I'll be like, did you hear my rant? I wasn't trying to put you out of a job. I told them to hire you somewhere else, just not here. So, yes, so I'm with Brandon Noble, former Penn State and NFL defensive tackle. And now we'll kind of talk a little bit of football, go back to that Villanova game. I am going to cop to the fact that I was one of these folks who I feel like has been kind of being poked fun at by a lot of the reporters on the Penn State beat. This is something that, in general, the media who covers Penn State really enjoys, which is antagonizing and mocking the people through whose largesse they earned their meager living. And we try not to do that on this program. We try to appreciate and value every member of our audience. But yeah, I'm one of these folks who sat through that Villanova game largely in agony, cussing at the TV, extraordinarily frustrated with, despite the big plays, which are great, awesome, I kind of expect you to roll it up on an FCS team. I don't care how good they are, they're an FCS team. If you want to declare yourself to be one of the top 10 and now top 5 football teams in America, you ought to do what Pitt did to New Hampshire, not what Penn State did to Villanova. And the fact that we could not get a push at the line of scrimmage, the fact that we couldn't run the ball any better against an FCS team than we could against Auburn, all of those things pissed me off in the moment. As I have reflected on it over the last 48 hours, I've realized, Brandon, that I probably need to just let some of that stuff go and not be so freaked out about it. I was enjoying the first few weeks of this season because I was taking them as a self-contained 7-week package, 7-day package. And we're 4-0. Who knows what the rest of the season is going to bring? We've had two really fun weekends beating up on teams that we thought were good, and now in hindsight, probably everyone on our schedule has been complete garbage, like every other team in college football, apparently, other than Alabama and possibly Georgia and Oregon. Everyone else is bad. I just need to learn to stop worrying and love the 2021 Nittany Lions.
Absolutely. But, I mean, look, it's – you're right. The Villanova game was, in the moment, frustrating. And rightfully so. You know, I think that when you position yourself and you start to position your football team to be one of the top teams in the country this season, like, that's a game that you have to go out and slap those guys around. And that's exactly what Pitt did. And that's a great and a terrible comparison all at once, right? Because New Hampshire is one of the top teams in that conference also. I don't know if we talked about it on the show or on the last podcast. The CAA is, to me, the SEC of 1AA football. And that conference and those two programs are usually perennial powers in that world. And so for Pitt to go out and do what it did, I think the flip side of that is Pitt has not played the kind of football games that Penn State had played up until that point, right? Like, they were not coming off of the whiteout game, the hangover of beating Auburn. And I mean, look, it affected Auburn too, right? You come out of a game like that and you do get spent. You're spent. And so the next week can be a little dicey. I tried to think back to my own career, and the only thing I came back to, like, we played in my senior year, we go to the kickoff classic and we play USC, huge game. You open it up, right? And then, like, the next 3 weeks are like Temple, Louisville, and not kind of Louisville now, right? But, like, and kind of, I don't even know who the other team was because I don't think it was Rutgers, but it was one of the, and I remember going to play Temple at the Meadowlands. So we'd just been there to play USC, right? And we literally turn around, and 2 weeks later, 3 weeks later, we're driving back to the Meadowlands. And you go, and it's like a half-empty, there's no energy. And just, like, to get going was difficult. And eventually you get going, and you go, and we win, and, you know, it turned into the game the way it should have been. But you know, that didn't the Nittany Lions were never in trouble against Villanova, which is great, right? That's the way it should be. But they didn't go out and just kind of wipe them off the map early. And that, I think, is the thing that you wanted to see. You wanted to see what Alabama does to Mercer, right? Where it's just like, it's over, right? We're here. You're going to get a check. We're going to kick the out of you for the first 20 minutes, and then we're going to go on cruise control, and we're still going to beat you up. And we didn't do that. But is it the end of the world? No. I think that, the season has started off so well. I think that the expectations got so high for many of us, and rightfully so, after what we saw on the field, that the Villanova game felt like a little bit of a letdown because of how well they played against, and well being relative, right? But like against Auburn and Ball State and Wisconsin, because those are three very good football teams that we went out and played really, really well against.
Well, let me ask you this, because this has got to be, in my mind, a point of discussion this week. We are taking it as an article of faith that those are three good football teams, largely on reputation and to varying degrees, especially in the case of Ball State, what they did last year.
Mm-hmm.
What we saw against Notre Dame on Saturday confirms that Graham Mertz probably sucks.
Yeah.
And, the whole – through three quarters, the Wisconsin defense looked like what we expected them to be and thought they were.
Right.
And then, it just finally all – the dam just kind of burst on them. Like, all of a sudden, the Fighting Irish started playing like a top 10 team, which they had not up to this point. Survived close calls against a Florida State team that's a total dumpster fire. Toledo, like it's not good teams taking Notre Dame to the wire. Meanwhile, you believed in Wisconsin just because of what they've built and the level of consistency that they've had there, dating all the way back to the Barry Alvarez.
Right, 1993.
Yeah, but they got killed. Auburn, as we talked about a lot going into our game, we knew nothing about because they'd beaten up two of the worst teams in college football.
Right.
And then they came to Beaver Stadium, and we thought we knew Penn State was good because they had beaten Ball State and Wisconsin, and Auburn looked to be our equal through much of the game, but Penn State came out on the right side of it. And then they barely beat – they needed essentially, not a miracle, but just a notch below a miracle to beat Georgia State. And then God bless that kid who got the pick six to make the score look slightly more respectable. Yeah. And Ball State has completely fallen apart.
Yeah.
They're a total mess. So, we all know the transitive property does not hold up in college football. But, because if it did, you could probably use some commonality of Ball State losing to Toledo and Toledo almost beating Notre Dame, then Notre Dame beating up Wisconsin and Penn State beating Wisconsin. Okay, Penn State's number four in the nation, which we are, crazily enough.
Yeah.
Talk me through whether or not Penn State fans should be concerned about any of that stuff I just talked about. And talk me down off the ledge because I'm a little worried about it.
I think that, look, man, you play the team when they show up on Saturday, right? Like, that's it. And everybody's season can go right or left any week. Look at the Nittany Lions from last year, right? You lose the Indiana game, whether or not you won it or not, right? Like, you lose that game, and what that does to your football team over the course of 3 or 4 weeks. And then they right the ship all of a sudden, and they go 5-0, 4-0, whatever they want at the end there. And then they decided not to go play in a football game, but we won't relive that. And football is an up and down thing, right? We had a hell of a battle with Auburn, and I'll just use that one as an example that environment and that the national hype and college game day. And these are 18 to 22 year old kids. Right. And so the high is high and the low coming off of that can be low. They don't get as hung over as we do now, but they get tired. Right. And so they're going to come down off of that thing. And you do have a little bit of a letdown, and that's natural. I think that our schedule up until this point has been a difficult one as we've played them on Saturdays minus Villanova. And now what those teams do for the rest of the year is completely out of our hands. So it really is, to me, as a player, as a coach, as a guy that watches and loves Penn State, like, I feel good about our body of work right now. I'm still concerned Like, because again, like, you know, I picked them to go 10-2, and I still see two losses in there.
Yeah, me too.
But I still feel like we are deserving of the hype's not the right word, but the love that we're getting nationally, and we should be enjoying it as fans, right? One of the things I try and, you know, the thing that I love about you and Kevin is Mike is, and how emotionally invested you are into the games, where like I don't get that invested. And I love to watch us win, but I understand that it's going to move on, right? And I think we talked about it on the podcast or the show. Like, as a player, right, I play the game, and then I know I get to go back to work the next week. And they're thinking about Indiana like James does, right? As much as we bust balls about 1-0, 1-0, 1-0, like that mindset of like, it's over 24 hours, I'm on to the next one, is how you live as a player and a coach. If not, you'll go crazy. But fans don't get to do that, right? We have to go to work and sit around and be on Twitter all day and do that kind of stuff. So but I feel good about the team. It's so much better than we were last year. That to me is the measuring stick. Like, we were at the bottom last year. And I think if anything, like a lot of things from the last year, right, it has put things in perspective for me. And I'm enjoying the hell out of this right now. I'm still going to be angry when they lose, because it's going to be something stupid, like they can't get a first down when they need it and they only need 2 yards. You know what I mean? Or something along those lines, right? You know, we're going to get the balls. They're going to run dive or belly up the middle for 4 quarters on us, and we're not going to be able to stop it, right? It'll be something like that that'll put it over the top for that week. But right now, I think we deserve to be the number 4 team in the country, especially when you look at the way the rest of the country is kind of shaking out right now. And it should be exciting. Like, I know you are, right? You know what I mean? For the next few weeks, it's going to be a hell of a run this year. I think it's going to be a blast.
A lot of extraordinarily confusing results.
Yes.
On the last college football Saturday. There is no doubt about that. Now, again, going back to the way the media kind of trolled the fan base a little bit for having some anxiety over the way Penn State played in the Villanova game. Look, first of all, if you're like me and in the moment you were super frustrated with what the Nittany Lions were doing on the field, as far as this podcast and our TV show is concerned, you are A-okay. God bless you. And if you weren't, and you were totally sanguine and at peace and just enjoying the fact that it was Penn State football and the fans were in the stands and the weather was beautiful and we were going to finish the day as we began it, a top 10 team, you're awesome too. And in fact, I'm envious of you because you're probably a little bit more mentally well-adjusted than I am. And as I'm sitting here thinking about it, one of my biggest frustrations, Noble, was how pleased I was with the lack of emotional ups and downs that were evident from the team through 3 weeks. And so I believe that this was the sort of team that could maintain the focus necessary to have a Pitt 77, New Hampshire 7 type result against an inferior team. And going back to what you said about it, just enjoying the season as it comes, I never had any anxiety during the Wisconsin or the Auburn games. I was enjoying watching good college football. I was happy to have it back. I was thrilled to be around Penn State football fans. It may have had a bit, for me, something to do with a brew pub in downtown Philadelphia, which shall remain nameless, which erroneously confirmed to me that they had the Big Ten Network and would be showing the Penn State game until they let me come in and order beer and food. And so I was streaming the game on my phone. In a sports bar, maybe not putting me in the greatest mindset to begin with, but I had my own mental lapse along with the rest of the team. I think James Franklin's assessment that those guys started listening to the outside chatter about themselves and came in with the knowledge that this was a team that they could beat with an arm tied behind their back, and they sure looked like it.
Yeah, and they could. I mean, at the end of the day, you can't beat a team like that. I used to joke with my D-line group, right, wherever I was coaching collegially, right, that like my mortgage payment is based off the performance of 18 to 22 year old young men. That is an insane concept. They are incredibly volatile creatures. It's a wonder any of us survive to adulthood. So you're going to get your ups and downs. And again, you know, you, the team goes from kind of, you know, a terrible year last year. And a lot of these, you know, this core group is from last year, to now all of a sudden you beat Wisconsin, right? You're nationally ranked. People aren't making fun of you anymore, right? They're loving you. And you see it on social media, you live in it. And then you watch the Villanova film, right? And the tape doesn't lie, right? So I'm watching this guy that maybe, you know, I just played against some creature from Auburn, right? Again, you know, just, you know, that middle linebacker that ran all over the damn place. I can't remember his name. It was a cool name.
Forrest Ryan.
Yeah. And you're just like, you know, where is this guy? You know, that it's not the same on tape, right? When you look at it. And so you ease up a little bit. It's human nature. I mean, it really is. And the coach's job is to make sure that it doesn't happen. But it's still a battle that is hard to win. And then you get out there on Saturday and you let it eat. And I was disappointed that we couldn't run the football against them. Everybody's kind of going into this like, well, Sean threw for 400 yards, and yes, that's great. But like, I think that eventually, in Big Ten football, you're going to get in a situation where you have to run the football to win a football game.
Yeah.
And it concerns me that for whatever reason, we weren't able to do it against Villanova. And I know the guys at Villanova. I know the defensive staff. They do a great job. That front is built to stop the spread run. It's a 3-3-5. They do a great job of pressuring, and they understand how to stop that inside zone, outside zone run game. And they sold out for it. Like, that's what they were like. You're not running the ball today. Now, they gave up 400 yards passing, right? But you pick your poison in that situation. And they did. And you know, that's how I would do it too. Like, man, I'm going to let this guy who's been up and down most of his career beat me. You know, and we have a group of talented guys on the edge that did that. But yeah, I mean,
it's look, interesting. Man, I keep hearing about that. You know, oh, we're going to let Clifford beat us. Well, like, I don't know how many more weeks this has to go on before people start saying, like, these guys can't run the ball worth a damn. Maybe we ought to stop letting Sean Clifford beat us. He does.
That's a great point. And not for nothing, but, you know, at this point in my life and in our careers, I can look past the Indiana game for a moment. And when you look, I got to watch Iowa play Colorado State this weekend.
Yeah.
And one thing that Iowa does as well as anybody in the country is rush four and drop seven. Right. So they're going to drop and play in a zone and keep everything in front of them and tackle. And they're going to rush the passer with four D linemen, and they're bring eight or six of them. Right. And it's just going to be these waves and waves and waves. And they're going to make you run the football because they're not going to give up the big play. They're going to make you earn it. Right. They're going to sit back and make you earn it. That's one of the things that's been really interesting. Just complete sidebar watching college football this year. And talking to people, and then even hearing it in coming through the media, that is something that a lot of people are going through. With the way that offenses have evolved and the game has evolved, what you're seeing right now in college football is a lot of people are rushing three and four and dropping seven and eight and forcing people to go the long way, right? Like, hey, we're like the old school, like if you're going to beat us, you're going to run the ball from the 20 to the goal line. You're going to go 80 yards, right? And that's hard to do. It's even harder to do throwing the football because there's incompletions. There's, you know what I mean? There's other things that can happen. And it's definitely something that's happening right now in college football defensively. Iowa does it better than anybody. And that's a game to me that they're going to have to run the football. And Iowa's D-line is good enough, and their linebackers are good enough to not let you run the football and drop that many guys. So that game to me is just absolutely the one where you're going to know who we are offensively.
Yeah.
After that football game, I don't know anything about Indiana at the moment except for Michael Penix is back, and I feel like that's the guy from the Will Ferrell basketball movie, but I can't think of his name either. The Woody Harrelson character, that's what always comes to my mind when I think of Penix. Yeah, I don't know. I think we'll beat Indiana, but Iowa scares the bejesus out of me because of how they play defensively.
What is the name of that movie? Semi-Pro?
Semi-Pro, there you go. Yeah.
The Flint Tropics, I remember that.
I can come up with the tropics all the time. I can never remember Semi-Pro. Great, underrated Will Ferrell movie. Ridiculous, stupid, but funny.
Well, Woody Harrelson did not have more interceptions than touchdowns like Michael Penix does right now.
No, he didn't.
So, look, I'm not – respect Indiana. I am not afraid of them. Again, if you're going to talk about Penn State as a top five team, you will put especially this version of the Hoosiers away on your home field under the lights. Let's go back to how Penn State fared on the ground versus the Wildcats, which was exceptionally poorly. I said it was like watching them not be able to run against the Auburn defensive front 2 weeks ago and watching them not be able to run even more so versus an FCS front last week was like watching somebody, you know, arm wrestle Mike Tyson and then David Spade and lose in the exact same amount of time. It's like it didn't matter. It didn't matter whether you had like a great all-SEC solidly built defensive front or a bunch of munchkins who couldn't get FBS offers. No offense to these Villanova linemen, but I'm just saying comparatively, like what they roll out every week in the SEC has no business being mentioned in the same sentence as even the best defensive lines in FCS. And Penn State couldn't do a damn thing against either one of them. In fact, we looked worse against Villanova than we did against Auburn. What the hell is going on, Noble?
I don't know. Like, It does piss me off.
It just pisses me off. How could you not get at least get a few yards? We were averaging 1.1 yards per carry in the first half, and that's horse.
Yeah, and that's hard, I think. I think that's one of the toughest things for Penn State fans to deal with because of the history of the program, right? Is like we have always been able to run the football and play defense. You know, and even as the game has evolved, that is something that has held up. And right now, man, I, like I said, my time at Penn State, right, I played against every day in practice, arguably the best offensive line to ever play there. And you know, we ran the ball. I don't know. It is a different, you know, my thought on, without going into the recruiting world too much and throwing stones and all that kind of stuff. I just think a lot of it has to do with the kind of kid we're recruiting, and the kind of offense that we do run. You know what I mean? I was calling, this is for actually tight end. I at a Villanova game a couple of years ago that I'm calling, and I'm down on the sideline pregame, and I'm walking around and just kind of watching things happen. And then Villanova had some big offensive line, some big trees. And I remember this, I'm standing there and this guy, like in like a, you know, like a starter Steeler jacket and like this like crusty old dude with like a mustache, like burning a heater on the sideline, right? And I'm like, what? And so I go up and talk to the guys, like, this looks like somebody I need to know. And I walk up to him, right? And I say, you know, how's it going? And I said, what are you looking at? And he's taking notes too, right? And I was like, you're a scout. He's the scout for the Steelers. I wish I could remember the guy's name. It was a great conversation. But he was, that position is one of the hardest positions to play. It's one of the hardest positions to coach. It's its own team within a team. I've said all these things before, right? And what's happening is, you know, from the NFL perspective, is that guys are not playing, you know, they don't even know how to get in a three-point stance sometimes. So you don't ever have to, like, if you think about the whole thing, right, you're trying to move somebody who's in a 3 or 4 point stance. So I already have leverage, talking about a defensive line.
Yeah.
Especially when you look at those little fire plugs that play in the middle right now. When you saw against Villanova and that little chunky fellow that played for Auburn that looked like a nose guard, right? You know, and like I'm 6'6". I'm not putting my hand on the ground. I'm not bending my knees. I'm not getting down low enough. And I've got to go try and drive this little thing out of the ground, right? That's all burrowed down in the ground like a tick. And I got to dig this thing out. And I'm not built to do that. And also the scheme isn't built to do that. You know, the scheme is telling me to go sideways. And so I think there's a lot of those things. I'm not excusing any of it. I hate the way our offensive line run blocks. I hate the fact that we can't get 2 yards. I hate the fact that we got under center, everybody put their hand down, and we couldn't get a yard on 4th and 1 a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, very frustrating. Yep.
You know, like that is disturbing. But I think it just goes back to the style of offense we play, the kind of kids we recruit at that position. We don't. I don't know that we developed that position very well. We all have high hopes for Troutman. Hopefully, he comes around and he does his thing. Because when you look at, again, going back to Iowa, they developed those guys. The other thing is, man, they recruit some kids that I think have a little bit more in their neck than our guys do, just for lack of a better term. You know, moxie in your neck, grit, whatever the word is. I don't know that our guys have that. And I think a lot of it is when you recruit the biggest and the best out of high school, how often has that guy been in a real dogfight? And then all of a sudden you're getting in a real dogfight for the first time in college. And it takes a while. It's a late bloomer, late developing position group as is. Yeah. I mean, that you shouldn't be on the field until your third year in the program, in my opinion, anyway. You should redshirt, not play, or maybe play as a redshirt sophomore, but that's it.
Well, we do sound like broken records on this show.
Yes, we do.
I feel like we have been reproducing the same content for years now about the offensive line, because what else can you say, honestly? Like, you look at their recruiting pedigree, you look at the different approaches we have tried coaching them, and it's just year after year, there is something wrong. There's something missing. And all I am going to say is people are, I think, clearly concerned about it, so I felt compelled to talk about it, because I think there were a lot of people who felt like I did on Saturday, which was watching this and just, you know, look, when you can take the win for granted as a matter of course, how you win does matter, especially because it has been hard not to watch the team climb the rankings the last several weeks and start to imagine what could be down the line. And I guess my advice to myself, put myself on the couch, and a segment of our fan base to whom I will not condescend along with me, is we all just need to take a step back and enjoy each game as a self-contained chapter in the story of this season, which is going to play out in its own time, and be patient and enjoy it week to week. And don't worry about what a run stuff on third down in a meaningless series against Villanova might mean for when you play Iowa in 2 weeks. Because Iowa looked like they might have been in a little trouble against Colorado State for quite a while on Saturday, and Colorado State sucks.
They do.
There were a lot of presumably good teams that lost or damn near lost two almost definitely bad teams on Saturday. So it just happens. It's college football. Yeah. It's what makes it great and what makes it frustrating and stressful.
Unless you're Alabama.
Yes. Yeah, there should be an asterisk on everything we just said does not apply to Alabama Crimson Tide football.
Right.
That's just a totally different thing.
It is nice to see Clemson getting kicked around a little bit.
How about that? How about that? We definitely could be seeing a potential reset of the stasis that has just paralyzed the sport for half a decade.
Yep.
This season. Other than, again, it'll just be Alabama at the top. But, you know, look, the rest of us, we got 129 Washington Generals, and maybe we're going to reshuffle the deck chairs on our Titanic before we eventually crash into the iceberg that is Alabama football. So, hey, you know what? Noble, if we get to be one of the rearranged deck chairs, I guess I'm going to call that progress and go home.
That'll be fun. Absolutely. Yeah. I would love to crash into that iceberg.
Absolutely. So, I think we're going to end it there for now. We're going to try to get the whole gang back to preview what I refuse to refer to as a revenge game against Indiana this Saturday. It's going to be awesome to have another night game in Beaver Stadium. I am very much looking forward to it. Like I said, each one of these things is a blessing, and I need to be at the front of the line of reminding myself to just deal with it that way. So, for our absent colleagues, Mike the Mailman and Kevin Horn, for former Penn State team captain and Fiesta Bowl MVP Brandon Noble, I'm your fake host, Chris Buchanani, reminding you to stay with us throughout the season. Give us a 5-star rating on your podcast platform of choice and write a review if you're feeling really saucy. Check out the obligatory PSU pregame show on TV Friday nights and Saturday mornings, depending on your area and channel. And take care of yourselves and each other until we meet again. We are.
That was the obligatory PSU podcast, presented by HappyValley.com. Like and follow at obligatory PSU.
Every time you hit like and subscribe, Mike the Mailman smiles.